Dude, I really, really appreciate you coming in here to the Batcave to speak with me today. It's cool because, you know, I think like from the listener's perspective, we will have just released the Yo-Yo episode.
Yes.
And then, you know, in that episode, we're like, okay, yeah, we'll touch base in like next month and get it. This is the conversation.
Right.
This is the cut to next month. You know, if this was a TV show, it's like the caption would be like, here we are. We're live in the studio having this conversation. So, you know, a place I always start, or I often start, is in the very beginning. And I love finding out and hearing people's first memories. So if you cast your mind back, Tony, what are some of the first images and visuals that come into your head? Maybe not even visuals, maybe as one of the other senses are coming into play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting you said that, because I was thinking about that on the train ride over here, right? It's just the understanding about our memories and consciousness and awareness. And, you know, it's like, at what point do you become, at least for me, Tony, Tony, right? And you hear these things. I've studied different like psychology books and stuff, and they're like, oh yeah, the terrible twos, right? Because as far as I could remember, like I've had a vivid like childhood memory of a lot of like different years of my life.
Yeah.
So the first one would be, you know, just being in San Francisco, living in my grandparents' house, come into the understanding that I don't have a father.
Mm.
So, you know, just being like, there's something different about everybody else, because that's like, oh, I have a grandfather and I have a grandmother. And then I see people like my aunts and uncles having like their significant spouses, and then, you know, their kids and their kids talking about their fathers. And I'm like, what? Something's not right here. Like, what do you mean I don't have a father? Where is he?
Yeah.
Right. So it's interesting because I had the opportunity to go back to that old childhood house. Whoa. So I was like vlogging. But I don't know. Like, the sense of time is so screwy for me. But I think it was about 6 years ago, I was pretty much vlogging, and I ended up in front of that house because I was telling a story how I just loved Batman. Like, we literally were just like watching TV. We were like that generation where it was just watching TV all day. My mom was paranoid about my father kidnapping us. So she was a single mother. She'd go to work, leave us with our grandparents. They just put us in front of the TV as a babysitter. No different from today. It's just, you know, obviously with the smartphone and laptops, computers. But I love Batman and the silly, like, you know, fight scenes with the like captions, like spacks, flaps.
Batman was pop. So silly. I don't know. Like, looking back now, you know, because when I think of Batman, I think of like, you know, Christopher Nolan's Batman.
I think
of,
right?
Rob Pattinson's Batman.
So sophisticated.
But then, you know, if you look back, like even at the live action movies before that, like Batman was a silly, there was a lot of silliness to
so
it, you know?
So silly, right? Like the costumes are silly, like the acting's like, but that's the thing. Like, it just shows again, like how much like we evolved, how everything's just become more evolved and sophisticated.
Yeah.
But then you felt like that was the thing. That was the shit, right? Yeah, yeah. So for me, I just loved like superheroes. So that was, I guess it was like my like sort of projection of what like a masculine, mm-hmm. like maybe a father figure or something. But, you know, I literally just was so bored. I'd like literally like try to like leave the house. I would find a way. And so the reason back to that vlog was I remembered the moment where I rode my like yellow tricycles made out of full on metal. And I biked over. I opened like the garage doors that like opened up, like two doors just opened up, and I just biked across the street to the liquor store. And I knew they sold candy, and I just parked my little tricycle there, went in, and the clerk looks at me, and he's just kind of like stunned, right? And he's looking at me, and then he's trying to like assess the situation.
Do you a form of ID, sir.
Right. And he's like, how old are you, right? And he basically like played a game. He's like, where do you live? What's your phone number? Who's your parents?
Yeah.
And I was just like chilling out at the liquor store, having a good time. And then I remember my grandfather's car like driving past, and he just looked over and saw my tricycle, and then he saw me, and then whoop, U-turn, parked in front, came in. I was like, "Grandfather, hey, Grandpa," and he's like, "What's going on here?" Right. So, fast forward like maybe 30 something years, I went back to that place. It actually is a church now, funny enough, right? It's like this mini church. And then I went back across the street. And speaking of Batman, I wanted to be Batman so bad that I remember taking my little baby blanket with a piece of scotch tape. I opened up the window, right? It was just old moldy window. And I literally put the scotch tape with my blanket on the ledge, propped my legs out and climbed down like I was trying to rappel down the building like Batman. And it was in slow motion. This was like my first conscious flow state. I didn't even realize what that was, right? But it was like this timeless moment. And I saw the tape just go snap. And then I free fell. Right. And it was like I fell forever, dude. It felt like eternity. And then slap, my feet smacked the concrete and had like pebbles and grit. So it was like embedded in my feet, right? And in that searing pain, that heat. So as I fell, I'm in a parking lot of this like supermarket. It was called the Pink Market. And there was these couple like literally loading their groceries in their car. And they see this like 3-year-old, probably 2.5, 3, fall out of a building, right? So they run to me and like I'm in shock, but I'm not crying. Mm-hmm. And they're like, "Oh my God, are you okay?" And I'm like, "Yes, I'm good." And then I look up and there's my grandmother's face in complete horror looking down. I'm looking up and she shrieks. And then she comes running around the building to me, really embarrassed.
Right? Yeah, sure.
And then she's like, I got it, right? She's Filipino, Japanese, so her English was, it was good, but she's like, I got it. And then obviously she was so embarrassed, right? Yeah. And then she just grabbed me, brought me back in the house. So that was like, to me, like the real big significant moment, because it was like I for some reason just like wanted to go on adventures. I wanted to get out of that cave and cage. And Batman was like my inspiration.
Yeah.
So the funny bit is like, you know, fast forward a couple of years later, my hearing starts to go. I start getting ear infections, right? I'm in preschool, 4 years old, and I get this massive ear infection, right? And it's so painful. Like we were on a field trip. We come back to the school. I pass out on our like cocks and in a hot sweat. And then my mom, I get woken up, my mom's like angelic face, like right there. She comes back from work and she's like, "What's wrong, son?" I'm like, "Mommy, my ears hurt." Right. And so that was the beginning of me going through all this like hearing test, going through surgeries to put tubes in my ear to drain like the fluid, to be on antibiotics for infection. So like I just realized like that was the beginning of my like health like journey. Yeah. I didn't realize it at that moment, obviously, but since then I've always been hearing impaired. And then the joke for my family is that, you know, Tony lost his hearing because he tried to fly out of the window like Superman. And I'm seriously like getting mad at like my uncles, my cousins, because they're like, "Yeah, he thought he was Superman. That's why he lost his hearing." I'm like, "No, I was Batman." I'm like,
yeah, you're not annoyed at them like making fun of the fact that you're hearing impaired. You're just frustrated they got the wrong guy.
Yeah, right. So it was like that was the inside joke like throughout my life. And it was like, how did I lose my hearing, right? And it was like a perfect storm. You could get into that later, but yeah, those were the significant memories, just being fatherless.
Yeah.
And then looking for like an idol, and then yeah, just pretty much going on these like little heroes adventures. Little did I know, right? And
so
and my life has been a loop of that, dude. Mm. A constant loop of these like similar stories of falling from great heights. Like that was the first one. Mm-hmm. You know, there's two other stories where I like literally fell from the sky, you know, and survived.
Man, lots of places to go. Okay, I'll just throw a comment out there and then I'll pick it up. Interesting that Bruce Wayne was also fatherless.
Really?
You know, when you think about it, like, you know, Batman's origin stories, parents were shot in the alleyway by the...
Yes, I remember the that mugger. In the movies.
And so, you know, Batman also grew up fatherless. I don't know if there's anything like in the subconscious that, you know, you kind of was another reason why you kind of attached on to the Batman figure.
Yeah, but I got the chills when you said
yeah,
that.
Yeah, but I think maybe we can, let's bring the Batman into it throughout the conversation. We'll kind of see where that takes us. Second thing.
Are you my shrink?
Yeah, yeah. I'll bill you at the end. Don't worry. It's really funny you brought up, you know, I asked about your first memory. My next question was, what's the first flow state that you can remember?
Yeah.
And you actually already covered that. So let's talk about flow today as well. I think Absolutely. That'll be really interesting. But I want to get to this idea of falling from great heights. Why do you think that has been a repeating pattern in your life? You know, what's up with that cyclical pattern?
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's like I didn't really look at it. I definitely knew I had patterns. Mm-hmm. You know, things happen in threes, which is interesting for some weird reason, right? It's like some Matrix stuff. But no, I, you know, like it was just the final, it's interesting. I don't know why.
It could just like, be, could just be the case that you put yourself in high places quite a lot.
It's true.
Statistically, you have a higher probability of falling if you actually go up there to begin with. You know?
Yeah, there's something about, you know, when I learned about the Greek gods and Olympus and, you know, all these different like unconscious things and psychology, right? I've always just loved the bird's eye view. I've always loved airplanes. Mm. I've always loved like that, like sort of higher perspective. I loved even being on the ground, just the contrast of, you know, going somewhere high to somewhere low and then vice versa. So I don't know, like, I don't know if it's because there's angels up there. There's all this like religious component growing
sure,
up,
yeah.
You know, going to Catholic school for 9 years and not being baptized, being an outcast that way, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, but.
Why did you not get baptized?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, like my mom just wanted me to get like a really good education.
Okay. She was like, look, the school's amazing. Don't bother with all that religious stuff.
Yeah, like we were totally getting peer pressured on many levels, whether it was, you know, like blatant or not, like just kind of hinting, right? And all our friends, like that was the other thing. It's like not only did I didn't have a father and it was obvious like for both my sister and I, but we also were the like outcasts where we weren't like everybody else in the school.
Yeah.
We were going to church, we're doing the services. We could pretty much do everything except like take the bread, you know?
Yeah.
We would actually sit back in the benches while everybody lined up. It was like weird, man. So it's like we always felt like outcast that way. So we wanted to fit in and we were begging our mom to get us baptized. And she said, this was like another significant memory. She said, you know, you don't need to, like God loves you no matter what. You don't need to be baptized or in some church. Mm. And when she said that, it's like when you hear truth, it like rings, you know? And it was like, yeah, she was like our sensei at that time, you know? She was like, wow, that was like some profound wisdom that came. And she's like, you can find God in nature. You can find God in like people and, you know, all around you. And like I said, like in our prior conversation, like I grew up with like Buddhas around and like crosses, right? And then like we had a family member that was Mormon, and then you had family members that were like an offshoot of Catholic or, you know, or Christianity. So it was like Methodist and Presbyterian. I'm like, what in the world? Why
the whole Rubik's Cube?
And then like, yeah, then you find out about like Hebrew and Jewish religion, and growing up in San Francisco, you see all these different things. So it was very like confusing.
Yeah.
And it was also like a blessing in terms of like just experiencing culture and variety. And, yeah. But yeah, just the high spaces again, you know, it's interesting. Fortunately, I don't need to like fall out of, you know, psychedelics was like a closest thing, which the final story of the falling out the third time was, you know, that was it. But yeah, it was like a, like it was like finally a wake up call, you know, maybe you just don't realize it until like you almost lose your life again.
Yeah.
Right. So yeah, I think I'm just slow learner, right?
Yeah, you know, what's the thing? Like if you don't learn your lesson going up the mountain the first time, you'll have to walk all the way back down and start again.
Yeah.
Dude, I've been there so many times in my own life. How would you define a flow state?
Yeah, so for me is this feeling of timelessness. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it happens in slow motion. You feel like a god, mm-hmm. almost like a video game where you're being channeled.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Something's like working through you. You're in awe of the moment. It's definitely a moment. A lot of times you don't realize you're in it until you're out of it, right?
It's like sleep.
Yeah.
You wake up and you're like, oh, I was asleep.
Yeah. So imagine when you're dreaming and all these things are just happening, right? So it is this feeling of like effortless. And that's the problem with when people start to get a taste of this this flow state, it becomes a drug. And you kind of misinterpret that like everything needs to be effortless and, you know, everything needs to be you have to live life this way, like permanently. And
to me,
I was like, you know, understanding and learning about the Buddha and like certain enlightened figures, you know, it's like, oh, that's like the ultimate goal, to get enlightened and you'd be in that space all the time, right? And that's where like I went on a search and a journey of like trying to find all these spiritual gurus and teachers and read their books and go to their seminars or meet them in person to try to get this like Buddha transmission, they call it, or activation. And man, I just literally like was so addicted to it. And I had in so many experiences, whether it was through sports, emergency situations where I had to like save people's life kind of thing, you know, riding waves, playing hockey, even during sex.
Sure.
Right. So it washing dishes, reading a book, going to a movie, right? So yeah, it starts to like broaden, but you're like, wow, man, this is very intoxicating. You know, you do feel like almost like if there was like a true self of you that was uninhibited and that you were like this superhero god.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. And so that would have been my thing for like most of my life, was having these moments of different experiences. And then the wisdom and the responsibility of holding that like flame of flow, right? To be able to like cultivate it and be wise on how you use it, or obviously like respecting it, being grateful when it comes, and then just being okay if you don't ever experience it again.
Yeah. Dude, really glad you took that direction you did. I've been thinking about this a lot recently, you know, common themes that we share. You know, I also grew up, and an area I still need to check myself in is there is this kind of strong hunger for strong male role models. And that can take the form of teachers or mentors or authors or podcasters or just about anyone will do, you know. My buddy and I, a great guy called Jamie, we often joke with each other whenever we're out and about somewhere, like maybe we're like walking up a mountain, or you know, we're out for a walk and we see somebody like speed past on a bicycle, or like this older man like run up the mountain beside us, or someone who just like, you know, pushing their child on the swing. Any example where you see like a pretty cool guy, we turn to each other and we're like, should we go ask him to be our dad? yeah, I do all the time now. If like if we do something responsible, like we'll kind of we'll look at each other and give like little puppy dog eyes, and it's like, do you want to be my dad? Like, or like if you see like an old man, you're like, can you be my adopted grandpa? Like, mm-hmm. can you take care of me?
Yes.
And it's interesting, you know, because I think I too have spent a lot of my life searching for that flow state, you know, and it's powerful and it's a beautiful thing. But it is a double-edged sword.
Ah, yes.
And I think I only really realized it's a double-edged sword, you know, in the last 5 years.
Okay.
Because if you're not careful, the driving force can be that desire to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just, that's classic addiction 101, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You know, like at the core of so much of these unhealthy coping mechanisms is that desire to run away.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's video games or pornography or drugs or alcohol or just about anything else,
yes,
I have to really check myself. Are you doing this to try and escape who you are, where you are, the season that you're in, the emotions you're feeling, or just about anything else?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not against flow. I love flow. You know, flow is still a big part of my daily life. You know, often when I do my hour of writing it every morning, usually it's a state of flow. There's mornings it's not, and I wish it was, but that's just, you know, the reality. So how do you harness the benefits of flow while protecting yourself from some of the downsides? And I had such a beautiful picture in my head when you were talking about the flame of flow. You know, that idea of like the keeper of the flame, like that person in the village who like was responsible for holding the fire for the community.
Right.
And they treated it with like such sacredness, yes, and such honor. And they were like, look, this fire is the source of our livelihood.
Right.
It's what allows us to cook our food, stay warm, but it also is incredibly dangerous. And if we don't steward it properly, it can burn our whole village down, you know.
Absolutely.
And I love the Jungle Book because it brings a lot of that stuff into it as well, but that's it.
Yeah, definitely holding a reverence for it. Mm. Absolutely. Yeah, I think you know, as I started to learn more about it and interview different people about it, and you know, flow is different for everybody, right? I mean, obviously there's a neuroscience component and even, you know, the endocrinology and the neurotransmitters, all that bit. But for me, it's understanding that there is like this developmental bit, like maturing. And when you're young, like, you're just young, dumb, full of cum, right? Like, so you're just like gravitating towards like the power of it.
Yeah.
You have no idea until you start researching, start to like kind of see the patterns and the loops and stuff. Certainly a double-edged sword, and then you just become a proper steward, like, you know, with the fire or someone that like holds a gun or a sword. Mm-hmm. And you, it's not something that for me, it's I don't like chase states anymore.
Mm.
I think that's part of like growing up. You develop into like a stage where it's true. It becomes almost like a more permanent state. And I wouldn't say a state, it's like a stage of development.
Yeah.
So it's like your baseline, which used to be like a high state, is now like an everyday baseline, right? So
yeah, so
that's what it feels like to me, because again, you know, in our talk before we started this podcast, it was this understanding of like, yeah, it was just maturity, you know, it was just maturity that, you know, you just have to like go through things like over and over, and then eventually you start to realize like I can, what used to freak me out and scare me, because that's one of the gateways of flow, it's fear, right? It's like, can you lean into it? Do you have courage? Do you have the ability to be vulnerable? And, you know, for me, like, girls scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. So I was sure. Like, oh, I'm going to drink alcohol because it was like the funniest guy. My brain was working amazing. And I was like, how do I live like this, right?
Yeah, funny enough,
I meet a Mormon guy. I was like, he was just such a ladies' man, right? And we go to a party and he wouldn't drink. But there'd be like girls all over him, like listen, like he was the storyteller. And
yeah.
And I ask him, like, how do you do that, man? He was a musician as well, and he's just like, dude, it's almost like that bit we were saying of a fellow that whenever he's depressed and it gets to that point where he wants to grab like a cigarette, he just pretends he has a cigarette. He lights a pretend cigarette. Yeah, he smokes it, has a couple of pretend puffs, and then he just flicks it.
Yeah.
And that's what my buddy did. He pretended that he was drunk. And I was like, so then it made me realize I didn't need like an external exogenous substance
to
reach a state. And one of the things is also like with fight or flight, right? Like whenever I would ride big waves, there was this feeling like before you actually got into the ocean, you like had reverence for it. You would do like your little warm up and stretch on the beach. And then you would go out like, this could be the last day of my life, right? Same with hockey when we were dressing up in the locker room before we stepped on the ice. I would literally sit there and like put on my gear, like I was putting on my armor.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? And then at the end, I would bow my head down in complete silence and like mindfulness. And I would visualize like amazing things happening on the ice. And then it was like, this could be my last day on earth, right? And then I'd go out and like give it all. And the bit is, I didn't even know that that's what I was doing, right? And so the fact that like I can lean into all these things shows like my maturity. So I could literally go back to like, this is one of the most amazing techniques that I learned from a friend of mine, also named Matt. We call him Double A because he spells it with two A's instead of two T's, right? And he said he was able, for me, because I didn't have a father, I didn't have the proper blueprint to become a man. So he took me through this sort of like trance. And in it, I was able to go as like adult Tony and meet little Tony and be the father of little Tony.
Yeah, man.
And I had this like instantaneous healing.
Yeah.
And now little Tony, if you could like go back in time and it was like a quantum kind of thing, it was like he's healed. So in an alternate parallel universe, little Tony actually has a father. And so from that universe, he's going to grow up with a different outcome than I am right now as like adult Tony. Super powerful, right? And so for me, just the ability to have that moment, and now it's kind of like, it's like a video game. I look forward to just like a fighter before they get in a cage.
Yeah.
It's that feeling like, you know, even coming here, I was like having little butterflies.
100%,
dude,
yeah.
You know, and it's like, you can prepare. I went for a run, 30-minute like hard run.
Nice.
Right? And it was like I was preparing. So you just become responsible for that fire and that flame and more mature. And that just takes time, man. Or you find someone that, you know, maybe could mentor you in that aspect, right? Like not all of us are lucky that way and it may take some time, but hopefully this will help people, especially guys, right? Like in this day and age, I mean, like, we're the dads, right?
Oh, bro. You know, it really is. Like, the term fatherless generation gets thrown around a lot, but it's the reality, you know? And not only is it the reality, it's the default, you know? Like, the same way the default of marriage is divorce now, you know? Like, 60% of marriage ends in divorce. You know, that has become the
norm.
The norm, yeah. And even if people grow up with fathers in the home, you know, I don't have any fancy stats to pull out of my ass here, but you know, there's a high percentage of them who don't have present fathers, you know, to the point where the friends of mine that have really, really tight relationships, you know, with a father figure, I could count them on one hand. You know, because it's not normal. They're the freaks. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they're telling stories and like
the outliers.
The room is like not with them. The room is like, what are you talking about, you punk? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. I just want to make a brief comment on what you said about going back to little Tony. I'm not really an inner child guy. I haven't done a lot of reading into it or research, but I am bought into the concept. And I have done some things that have been really beneficial. And the thing that I love about what you said is, you know, in some ways, little Tony is here with us right now. You know, the inner child is there.
Absolutely.
And the same way, you know, my inner child is here with us now. The beautiful thing about that is that adult Tony and adult Matthew are also here.
Yes.
And I think like so much of a lot of the stuff has kind of come up since having our daughter and seeing our daughter grow. You know, she's about two now, and you know, it forces you to confront a lot of things in your own life. And you're also confronted with just a lot of beauty and a lot of that raw childlikeness, mm-hmm. that you're like, wow, like I gotta get me some more of that back in my life. And so much of that as an adult, I think, is allowing your adult to be the father figure. And what I mean by that is allowing him to be the protector, allowing him to be the provider, allowing him to set the boundaries and create the space for the child to run around, mm-hmm. and play and be free and not have to worry about all those adult responsibilities, you know?
Yeah.
Because if you look about it, you probably experienced this in your own life. A lot of people listening probably experienced this. The number one way to kill a childhood is to add too much responsibility too soon. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got a child who is taking care of their parent who maybe is addicted to drugs or, you know, whatever. That's the fastest way to let that go. And so I think the opposite is also true. The fastest way to bring your child back is to create a safe space where they can completely exist and be themselves. Like when I go out for a walk with my daughter, she's not thinking about the cars. She's not thinking about falling in the river. She's not thinking about that dog might come and bite me, because she knows that her dad is handling all that stuff. Okay, she's not actually thinking that.
Right.
But you know, she feels safe because she's like, ah, mom or dad are here, so I can just be me.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's really interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think it's just reassuring to have, you know, again, like as a child, you have these people that are like just there, you know, and that not just there because they're like physically there, but like the fact that they can get down to their knees onto eye to eye level with the child, mm-hmm. and acknowledge them, right? And that to me was, for me, it was like, that's what I was yearning for. And my mom provided that when she was around, when she wasn't working, you know.
That's a single parent dilemma though, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, it's just everybody else. We were basically at the mercy of people like looking after us. And then they just put us in front of a TV. So that was just another like faulty program that I got. Again, with not having a father, was looking for a father in some kind of like TV show or movie or superhero, right? And then that kind of like burned me later on, because I had this weird addiction to finding like a father figure, as you said, when your buddy would see some cool dude and say, can you be our dad? And I literally was like, even up till recently, had like these sort of like asshole mentors, because that's what I thought like a man was, sure. right? Just hard edge, you know, always like taking risk and doing cool things, but, you know, was a bit of a jerk and a bit of a narcissist. So it had all these like old relationships where there was a lot of narcissism. And the reason I stuck it out was because, funny enough, narcissists tend to invent things or discover things. And then, but they also think that their thing is like the greatest thing since like sliced bread. Like,
sure.
Their thing is the only thing. And
yeah,
it's
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I would stick around because I would learn like so much from them, but there would be so much like abuse. And then I would just slowly like back away, mm-hmm. until I actually like up leveled that skill, like in a video game.
Yeah, right?
And so it was like, I now had that tool. But sometimes, like, you have to kind of go through like an asshole mentor or a sensei to like, you know, get to the other end of it. I don't think it's necessary, but I just don't want, I mean, and the funny bit is I tend to, when I coach, do that. But I have to realize, like, not everybody responds that way, you know? And so I've just gotten more, like, compassionate and more patient. But it is, like, finding, like, balance. I guess you have to just experience extremes.
You know? And you go, again, that's kind of where maturity comes into it as well, I think, where, you know, the child can't defend itself from the abuser. And part of you growing and maturing is realizing that you can fight back.
Speak up.
You can speak up.
Stand your ground.
You can remove yourself from the situation.
Yeah.
And if the foe or the abuser is too big for you to handle yourself, you got to go and get some allies, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's in the form of, in extreme cases, like law enforcement, right?
Yeah.
Or whether that's the case of, you know, I got to go to a therapist or I got to go to AA because my foe is an addiction that I cannot handle myself.
Right.
You know, and it's the responsibility of us as adults is to protect the kids.
Yeah.
You know, and to protect the kid inside us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if there's an abusive relationship in our life, the adult has to step up to deal with it for the sake of the child.
Right.
Because otherwise that part of you will just die. It'll shrivel up and disappear. And then, you know, again, it's our, speaking more broadly, like it's our responsibility as adults to step up and speak up and step in for the younger generation.
Yes.
You know, with all the different things that are going on, and we could talk for days about mental health and fatherlessness. Mm-hmm. And, you know, again, that's the challenge I even feel listening to you. I'm like, right, okay, we've talked about the fatherless generation. What am I doing as I am now a father? You know, I now am in a position to fulfill those roles for the people that need it. And that's a huge challenge. The second thing I wanted to kind of mention alongside that was when you have that unhealthy desire for an idol or for a father figure, it also just messes up your relationship with mentors and managers and bosses and everything, because you put them on a pedestal that they were never meant to be on.
Right.
So you need them to be absolutely perfect in every single way.
Yes.
Or else, you know, the expectation is shattered. And the reality is it just leads to the relationship getting burnt.
Right.
Because no one can do that for you.
Yeah. You know? I think that you just, obviously we don't have that blueprint or model.
Yeah. Right?
So like you don't have the model to be assertive. So just like I said, it's nice when you can go down to a child level and look at them in the eye, or even an animal. You know, obviously some animals will find it aggressive the way you're looking at them, but
dude, the swans are the most aggressive guys on the planet. Like I'm bad. Like I love to like make eye contact with them and just see what they do. They start like walling up you, squaring up you. They're like, you want to go, bro?
Yeah.
Come on, man. Let's go. Let's go.
Got some beef.
They're the hardest lads.
I'm going to try that next time. Maybe when we leave, we'll go to a pond.
Honestly, dude, like Hillsborough Lake is the best for it because they're so...
Oh, such a good lake.
They're so domesticated, you know, because they're around people all the time.
Yeah, they're being fed.
They just like, dude, we own this lake.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're on our turf, bro.
We thought we were like Jesus, man. Like, all the animals were coming up to us, right? And they're like kind of standing there. And we're like, what in the world's going on? And then we looked behind us. There was like a coin-operated, like, food pellet. Like, oh, they've been so, like, Pavlov conditioned.
I love that. You were like, dude, like, this is it. We're there for the final.
All the work is finally, like, happening.
They feel my energy.
I'm like the duck healer, the swan.
The duck healer.
You know, like, what do they call that guy? The dog.
Dr. Doolittle? The dog whisperer.
Dog whisperer. Swan whisperer, right?
That's class.
Yeah, back to, like, so, yeah, when I did that little Tony exercise, you know, AA said, what would little Tony say to his uncles and cousins when they were bullying him, right? And I was like, oh, wow. And I literally envisioned little Tony going up to them and just standing his ground, looking them dead in the eyes and saying, don't ever do that again.
Mm.
and then until they broke eye contact, right? Mm. Or they could have been like, whatever, and it would just be like, at least I know I stood my ground, and then I could have boundaries where I don't even have to hang out with them anymore. They can say stuff and it wouldn't even bother me, right? But it's all those kind of little things that now I look forward to, like I like step into those situations, right? Learning martial arts and all this other stuff, you kind of like have this blueprint of being assertive, and it's really nice. And what were you saying back there as well? It was just like the kids. Yeah, just being responsible. Like now as a father yourself of a child and stepping up for this generation, you know, because like it's pretty obvious like where this is going, man. Like, and I think it's time for the men, you know, because also the thing, the women were also taking men roles. And that was weird because my mom had to be both my dad and my mother, right? Yeah. And I got this screwed up programming from that as well. And so it's interesting, man. I think the cool thing about life is it kind of reflects back to you, like what you haven't like mastered or what needs to be addressed. Yeah, and then back to your question, I think that there was something that from high places, I had this idol. I was looking for like this God and a father. That sounds funny. You know, in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, right? And so that was the thing when I met, like, my clients became like all of my idols, weird enough. Mm-hmm. I was like, I idolized these people and they became my clients. And then it was a Wizard of Oz situation. And it was like, they're human, right? I saw behind the curtains. Toto pulled the curtain, pulled the rug, and it was like the only difference is that they were just highly skilled in a specific thing that was extreme valued in society. But outside of that, like they had like even worse problems. They, even though they had the fame, the money, they had everything material-wise, anything at their disposal. And like they would tell me, like, why are you so happy?
Yeah.
How come you have a smile on your face? And I'm like, but you have everything, right? And so it was a trip for me to see, you know, they say like be careful like meeting your mentors, you might be disappointed, right? And that's happened many times. And a lot of times like they were really kind to me because of what I did for my profession and the skill level that I had. But once they got what they needed, then it was like I wasn't of any value to them anymore. Yeah. And then it was just weird, like hanging out in their like their cliques, right? Because it was like an unsilent judgment, like, why are you here?
Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, I'm here because I love like your facility. You said I could come anytime. I'm always welcome.
Yeah.
But they're like, you're not one of us anymore, you know? And it was just like, oh, okay, well, I'll go. Right. But I needed to see that. I needed to go through the pain of that rejection and then realize, like, oh, shit, I fell into the pattern again. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Look, you know, the,
Projection.
I think you always have to be aware of the patterns that have been repeated in your life.
Yeah.
And even the patterns that have been modeled to you, you know. Like it is, you know, like I said earlier, it's interesting, like starting my journey through fatherhood. You know, this is not a new thing that I'm saying here. You know, people have been saying this for all of eternity. But, you know, you do something and you're like, oh, hello, mother. Or you do, you know, you do something else. You're like, oh, there's the dad in me. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you said what they said.
There's my father jumping out. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's interesting to navigate that. I love, you know, what you said about how you stepped away from those groups. I know a lot of people who stay there and they just stay there forever, you know, and they're in those cliques that don't appreciate them, don't respect them. There's no real genuine friendship there. They're just kind of like they attach themselves because I don't know why. Maybe they feel like they don't have anywhere else to be or whatever. And something I've been thinking about a lot recently, and it is a little bit back to that, like, you know, the inner adult and being mature. It's a real tough sentence, but it's this idea that like you deserve whatever you tolerate.
That's right. Yeah. And once you're in a dysfunctional relationship or a group, And, you know, it's one thing when people disagree and they're having like that, like town square kind of thing. Yep. And it's another thing when you're in a group and everybody agrees with each other. It's dangerous. But once it's toxic, or you feel like you're not valued or acknowledged, but it's just like a job. It's like, you know that it's time to move on, a relationship. It's just you're honest, and it's scary, right? I mean, that's why people stay in abusive relationships. I stayed for a while just because it was like, wow, this is a whole elite circle of the world. So like, you know, I'm not going to go too deep into this because it'll definitely like fire people up, but like just how the pandemic was like handled, right? And I was behind the scenes and saw how these people think and interact and how hypocritical they are, because they like send out these laws, make people follow them, but then they're out having their own parties, right? And so I saw all of this going on. And, you know, growing up in California and watching Hollywood and think like, oh, I either become an actor or a superstar athlete. And, you know, I was moving in that direction. And once I saw the bureaucracy, I started working with pro athletes, started working with Hollywood, like superstar actors and you name it, like even meeting politicians when I lived in Guam and seeing behind the scenes, I was like, wow, man, this is what all of us is chasing.
Yeah.
You know, or going to college and chasing a degree and then not being able to get a job, being like, you know, six figures in debt. I don't know, man. I must have angels something guiding me. But I was like, okay, it's like the universe, like, you want to see it?
Yeah.
We'll show you.
Yeah.
And then it's like the devil. It's like, do you want it? You can have this, but you have to give up your soul.
Dude, it's so true. I'm loving how this is turning out. This is nowhere near what I expected, and that's my favorite podcast and experience. I think it's so, so critical. You know, even what you said earlier, you said something amazing that unlocked a little problem I've been chewing over my head for about a decade, and it was the problem of teenagers. I was like, why are teenagers the way they are? And I think back, like, so let me paint two pictures, okay? The picture of me today is, I'm a pretty boring dude. Like, I have a really, really simple life. Okay, I've got a very exciting job by most standards, okay? But that aside, like, you know, I go to bed at 9 o'clock. You know, I get up at the same time every day. If you look at, like, what I do in my off time, it's unbelievably basic. And I love that. But if you look at me as a teenager, like, I'm trying to stay up till 3 a.m. every night. I'm driving around trying to see the sunset and the sunrise. I'm looking for the northern lights on the north coast of Ireland. You know, I'm doing all the stuff and I'm glad I did it. And that's part of being young and that's great. But I was constantly chasing a state, like you said. I was chasing the highs, like the ultimate high.
Why though?
I don't know.
Because you're in pain.
Well, yeah. Well, I knew that. I knew that.
Yeah. But you don't know that when you're a teenager, that there's like some kind of suffering and angst going on.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like growing pains and this weird like transition, childhood. You're starting to become an adult. Mm-hmm. And then you have all these structures in places and people like telling you to be in line. And
yeah. But, you know, I often think about it as like I was chasing and there's that big hit. What was it? Chasing the Sun was a big club banger back in the day. And I think that's the best way to put it. Like I was chasing the sun, you know, like I was reaching for an eternal summer. I was like Gatsby stretching out my arm, trying to grasp a hold of the green light that receded before me year after year. You know, yet I still beat on boats against the current. Like I tried and I tried and I tried. And, you know, that's what came into my head whenever you were talking about, like, you know, all of these rich people, all these successful people, these super athletes, these Hollywood actors. In some ways, a lot of us can be guilty of trying to chase that. And then you get there and you realize that those people are also just chasing. They're also reaching out their hand, trying to grasp the green light, trying to hold on to something they can't actually hold in their hand. And then you realize, happiness is an inside job. It's not about getting. It's about being. It's not about getting to this place or that place or achieving this thing or having this amount of money in the bank or landing this amazing podcast guest or building your business to X or Y or selling it or whatever or going to this country. If I take everything off my bucket list, I'll finally be happy. You know, I think back to being 16 and I had a bucket list that was like 1,000 entries long. And I'm not against dreaming, but it's where you find in your sense of contentment, where you find your sense of satisfaction. And I think you have been given a very powerful and dangerous gift of seeing people at the top and realizing that they don't have it. Whatever it is that collectively we're looking for, they don't have it.
Yeah, you and I are both boring, dude. I
mean, yeah, are you boring too?
Super boring. Like, you know, Scott Riley, our buddy, Causeway Living, the same. Just you, I don't know. I mean, he's definitely seen wealth as well. And but also for me, like traveling internationally and seeing poverty and going like, what am I complaining about, man? Right? Like seeing these like naked kids in the street, like begging for food or money and, you know, banging on your window, whether it was in Mexico or India or the Philippines for me, like Bali. Bali was interesting because the kids were like happy playing with sticks and stones. They didn't have like,
yeah,
toys, like Western toys. They were just happy. You know, that's what they say about a lot of like the natives. That being said, you know, people have a romanticism around like American natives, and you know, it's like, yeah, they're close to nature, but they would pick, you know, to have some sort of extra comfort.
Yeah, yeah.
Extra
if they could choose the reality where half of their children didn't die before the age of 8,
yeah,
they would definitely choose
right,
that.
Right.
And I agree with you. There is like a, it's almost like a pornification of poverty, isn't it? Where you're like, oh, those are the good old days. If we can just get back to that. And I've been guilty, been real guilty of kind of that line of thinking. But at the same time, you know, I've also been in communities around the world, whether it's in Rwanda or Nepal or Haiti or wherever, and they've got it.
So simple.
They've got it.
Yeah.
That thing.
That's right.
That a lot of us in the West are chasing, they've got it. But I know, okay, it's not just an East to West thing. Like there's people I know who are not successful in the world's eyes and they've got it all.
That's right.
Everything that the world is looking for, they have in the palm of their hand.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no worldly success to show for it.
Yes.
And that's powerful.
So powerful. And I'm fortunate to see those models, right? I think that's why travel is so important. You traveled. Everybody needs to travel. I mean, that's the one thing about the Mormon religion, that they send their missionaries out, right? So it's like,
dude, can I go on a Mormon rant for 2 minutes?
Yeah,
right?
Man.
Right. So I'm really, really interested in this idea of the fatherless generation. I'm going to speak quickly here, okay? And I'm really, really fascinated by like, what are some of the initiation rites of passages that exist around the world, and what are kind of some discipleship models that you know we can learn from, and to give young people a pathway. You know, you're a child, you go on this journey, and now you are an adult, and here's some responsibility. How do you bridge that gap for young people living in Northern Ireland today? And dude, one of the best models I've ever found is in the Mormon religion.
Yeah,
it's crazy. Like from, I don't know exactly the numbers, but you know, I think like by the time they like turn 12 or like a teenager, they go through this like super intense, really, really rigid program that ends with them graduating and then going off on what you're about to describe to us. That's all I wanted to say. Take it from there.
Yeah, right. They have a 2-year mission. They actually learn a language. They don't know where they're going. I think they give like an option of learning like 2-3 different like languages. And then they're told like, this is where you're going.
Yeah.
Right? And they go with like a buddy, right? So they always
it's a little bit like military service for Mormons.
That's right. That's right. Right. And that was man, like there is something that like every, not just guys, but everybody should go through like a rite of passage. It's just that what I heard from our our mentor recently said, women know when they're becoming women because they have a menstrual cycle. Mm-hmm. But guys don't know when they're becoming men.
Do you know what? I've never once thought of that in my whole life. Because I've always been like, you know, why does the 12-year-old or 13-year-old, I can't remember exactly what it is, Jewish fella get a bar mitzvah? You know, it's like, there has to be a clearly defined moment. And it's all, for men, it's usually like artificially constructed. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you know, break the plate and now you're a man. Or like, go kill a wolf and now you're a man or something.
Yeah, get circumcised, you're a man.
Yeah. That's a really, really, again, just a simple little unlock for me. It's like, oh, because there isn't a very clear defining moment where it's like, you have now entered puberty. Yeah. Welcome, my man. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, it's like for a girl, it's like you can have a baby, right? Yeah. But there's like, what's a guy going to go through? Like, sure. Yeah, I can have babies, but then I can leave.
Yeah.
Right? And that's the thing. It's like, so it's easy for us to become, you know, donors, right?
Yeah.
Right?
It's just no response, no strings attached.
Yeah. You know? Exactly. Right. And so that's pretty much the model of modern society. Mm. Right. Unless you go to these places where they have it together, they need their little tribe to survive. Right. But Western world, you don't need a tribe to survive. Right.
Yeah, man. And that's the thing, you know, there's been a lot of people talking about the young men crisis. And like, as much as I've looked into it, it seems to be one of, not the only, but one of the best things you can do is give that young man responsibility.
Yes.
You know, make him matter to his community. Give him something heavy to carry.
Heavy to carry, something to step up to.
Yeah.
You know?
Because, you know, it's that self-initiation that you and I and a lot of people listening is you're trying to prove your strength or find yourself or step up to something, but it's a vacuum. So what are you stepping up to? You're stepping up to like the popularity in school, or you're stepping up to overcoming an extreme sports situation, or you're stepping up to prove yourself in a physical domain. Do you know what I mean? It's like, you need that.
Yeah.
You definitely do.
Yeah, man. This is great, dude. This is a lot of insights. Great. I definitely will pay you double at the end of this session.
Do you know what, man? This has taken a totally different turn than I expected. And I kind of just want to let it be what it is. I feel like this is actually, I am a big believer that, like, you know, conversations like this on a podcast, they're there to serve. And I feel like this is really going to be directed towards people who are in situations and in relationships that deep down they know they shouldn't be in. And I don't know if they're looking for a sign or waiting for like a moment to like, or trying to find the courage to take that next step. But like I would say, like if you've been listening to this and this stuff is resonating with you, then I would say, here's your sign.
Yeah.
You know, like we didn't plan on talking about any of this stuff today. Not even a little bit.
Yeah. That's just the story of my life, right? Like it's so unscripted or like it's magical. It's better than I can script, you know. It's like I had the goal set and the visionary and the secret and all that stuff, and all that stuff happened. It's mind-blowing. It's how powerful we are and how you can bring in existence a lot of things.
Yeah.
But it came from a place of like getting stuff, right? And to fulfill you for a moment, right? And that, yeah. Like I literally accomplished a lot of different things and I got there and I was like, shit, that's what we're all chasing, you know?
It's over.
Yeah. And it's here, like, it is. Hey, go get the next big thing.
Oh, no, it's gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah, party.
Yeah.
And then, you know, back on it and.
Yeah, you sell the company. Oh, this is great. I read a really interesting article the other day about tech startup founders. And they kind of made the point that, you know, the whole mindset of the young entrepreneur is like, I'm going to build a company, I'm going to float it on the stock market or sell it and exit and get all this money. And then I'm free. Then I'm going to have a family. Then I'm going to be more present with my kids. Then I'm going to learn 3 languages and the ukulele and take up surfing and da 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 da. and they sell the company. And then 6 months later, they start a new one.
Yeah. No purpose.
That right there is a modern day Greek tragedy.
Yes.
So look, I'm not against people building multiple businesses, but it's that compulsion, you know? And I genuinely believe that we all need to work. I think work is an important way, is an important structure to organize your life around and to add value to society, no matter what you do. But it's whenever it's all consuming like that, you just know, dude, this person is chasing the wind. And it genuinely breaks my heart, dude. Genuinely. One more segment, little chapter. I don't have any notes in front of me, but the chapter that I have in my head that I want to explore, this could be a dead end. It's about Batman. And it just kind of dawned on me this. So Batman becomes a superhero. Interestingly, he doesn't really have any superpowers. He's one of the few superheroes that doesn't have that supernatural element to him.
Can't fly.
Yeah. Which is really fascinating.
Yeah.
In and of itself.
They have like crazy strain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's just a regular dude, but he still has that persona.
Right.
But the thing that struck me about Batman just now is that, you know, he becomes fear itself. He becomes the very thing that he fears, which was, you know, the bat, because he fell down the well whenever he was a boy and he was afraid of the bats. And so his way to like overcome his fear was to embody his fear and bring that fear to the bad guys and all that sort of stuff. But it's really interesting. Like, I think Batman is a bit of a Greek tragedy as well. Because if you look at him, number one, his human persona, you know, Bruce Wayne, he's a billionaire who has it all, but also has nothing. But his superhero persona is the shadow version of that, where he also has it all. He's a successful superhero, you know, he's a bona fide crime-fighting legend. But where does he spend his time and where does he go? He goes into the cave.
Mm.
You know, he became a superhero to try to climb out of the cave, to try to get out of his environment. And in the process of doing so, he isolated himself even further.
Right. Yeah, my mentor, AA, said that Batman's actually modeled after Odysseus from the Odyssey. Homer, right? So I was like,
bro,
oh shit, because he's just trying to get home, man.
Dude.
And he's going, like, he just has this convoluted, like, obstacle after obstacle trying to get home.
Wow.
To his family, right? And it's just a similar kind of archetype.
Dude, right? I never thought about that before. At his core, he's just trying to stop his parents from getting shot.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway, my question for you was, tell us about a cave that you have found yourself crawling into at a point in your life, and tell us about how you were able to bring other people inside of that in order to get yourself out.
Damn, man, I'm squirming in my chair. I was literally like squirming as you were saying that. I was like, oh, dude, that's like such a powerful question. Time that I found myself in a cave and then trying to bring folks into you and then get out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not prescriptive, you know. Tell us about a cave and tell us how you got out of it.
Yeah. You know, the only thing that comes up is psychedelics.
Yeah.
Just heavy. It could be like cannabis, you know. I mean, the first time I got high, like, my buddy fed me a brownie and didn't tell me.
Oh, damn. Sneak attack?
Yeah, so it was like even more intense because of the edible, which is even more intense than smoking it. But yeah, just, you know, on the journey of trying to discover maybe enlightenment or you, the thing is, like, people, things are trendy, right? And so when you fall into this category of like a boy who's seeking his father, and you end up in these like different caves. You know, one cave that comes to mind is like the Joe Rogan cave.
The echo chamber.
Yeah, right. Like I learned so much from him and his guests, similar to when I listened to your podcast. I mean, he literally inspired me to start one,
yeah,
right?
Man, yeah.
And but the problem is when they talk about psychedelics, just throw it out there and not really like caution naive people.
It's like the flame we talked about earlier.
Oh,
you know,
dude,
you need that sacredness around it,
right?
You can't just be like a teenager that goes and like steals the flame and runs around the forest with it.
Yeah, yeah. And so he would and his guests would kind of touch about stuff, but like literally you say, hey, if you ever get the opportunity, like take 5 grams of mushrooms, you know. And it's like, I literally did that.
Yeah.
And it didn't turn out well. Like, I'm lucky I'm still here to talk about it. But, you know, that is a cave that I found, you know, it's become so hyped up, even though, you know, they're trying to bring it back. It has its usage, but they don't teach people about like dosage. And you're a teenager, you don't learn about dosage. You know, you learn the hard way. Hopefully you don't like crash a car or kill somebody, yeah. Kill yourself. And even as an adult, I was still naive and took a dose that was just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And I felt stuck in the cave. Like I literally understood what, you know, like psychotic, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. an episode would be like, right? Because when you're under that and at those dosages, you feel like you ain't going to be stuck in hell limbo land forever, right? And then, of course, you finally, like, if things work out, you finally get out of it and you're like, oh shit, man. And you could laugh about it and you could like kind of like punch your friend in the shoulder. And it's funny because a lot of art and comedy comes from the most scary adventures, whether it was like intentional or not.
True.
So to me, that would be the cave that be careful. Be careful. Like, it's very powerful for me. They say, like, once you get the message, hang up the phone.
Ooh.
I got the message the last time I went through a trip, and I was, like, in that world, and I go, there's nothing here that I need to learn anymore. And so I hung up the phone, and I'm now integrating all that data that came to me into the world. And it's like, I don't need to like get high or chase a state. Yep. Like I'll do things, like take a shot of whiskey because I'm like enjoying the moment. I can regulate the dose. I'm not addicted to things as much. I mean, I still like YouTube and I go down those rabbit holes.
Yeah, you're only human.
Right, right. But I mean, they're like
YouTube's like, you know,
yeah,
digital heroin.
Right, digital crack. And I'm not on social media, but like some things are just more benign than others. So, so yeah, that's like the cave, like, you know, caveat emptor, right? Like buyers beware, like, right? Because it is useful in the right context setting with I think a proper trained therapist. Like, it's amazing what's possible. But to just tell people on a podcast who are like a bunch of dudes looking to Joe Rogan as their idol and their father, right? Like that's the one thing to be careful of.
Yeah. No, yeah. I find that really refreshing because you're right. There is a lot of content around psychedelics at the minute. Coming through streams that, like, it's hit mainstream. Do you know what I mean? Whereas before it was like, you know, the niche podcasters were talking about it and all their buddies and their friends' podcasts. But now it's just like, it's part of the culture. Yeah. And it feels like every single podcast you turn on, there's someone talking, saying something about psychedelics, you know?
Yeah.
And so I really appreciate the I appreciate the different point of view and the important point of view there, you know?
Yeah. It usually takes someone's been there, done that, right? And it's hard because you have friends that are still in it and they're still like bypassing, right? There's like spiritual bypassing where you like go to all these self-help seminars and you listen to the tapes, you buy the book, you go see the guru, you try to get that transmission I was talking about. But there's also like psychedelic bypass where it's like you're just, again, like you're chasing the dragon in the States, right? Yeah. And you feel amazing. You feel like God, everything's so clear. And then it's like Monday rolls around, you're hungover. Over the weekend, reality sets in. I got to go do my like 9 to 5, 40-hour week, right? I can't wait to like go to that world again, check out, experience the bliss, and then do it over and over. And it's like to see my friends irresponsibly. It's like I love them, but I can't hang out with them anymore. It's really hard. And it's back to that teenage question that you said, like for a teenager to have the ability to walk their own path in front of the clique, to finally say, I'm done with this relationship, or you guys have fun, I'm going to go the other way.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of courage and the ability to be cool with yourself, right? I love myself so much. I'm like my best company.
Yeah. And again, that's a rare thing because most of us spend our time trying to run away from that person, looking at us in the mirror, you know?
Yeah.
But that's it. Like you hit the absolute nail on the head. Like whether it's through religion, whether it's through a spiritual experience, whether it's through video games or business or literally anything under the sun, you just have to look at that and be like, am I trying to bypass pain? Am I trying to escape from pain? Am I trying to escape from reality? Because the only way you get through the other side of that is by dealing with it.
Yeah.
And that involves rolling up your sleeves and doing the hardest work you will ever do in your life.
Oh, man.
And the continuous work.
Right. Back to Batman going in his cave.
Bro, the cave you fear to enter holds the treasure you see.
Yeah. Absolutely, man. Yep.
Yeah. That's good, dude. That's really good.
So now I'm going to find a window to climb out of.
You're like, damn it, Ormu Bath, it's ground level.
I'm like, Belfast, where are the big buildings? I'm used to skyscrapers.
Oh, man. So much in there, dude. I love that. I love that idea of chasing states. Man, there's so much good stuff to unpack there. Okay, well, I guess to end then, let's just do a stock close. Let's just land the plane in the usual way. It's nice because we kind of touched on this a little bit. But, okay, no, we'll do two or three. Okay, we'll do two or three. If you could take anyone from Northern Ireland, dead or alive, out for a cup of coffee or a run or a little shot of whiskey, who would you take? Where would you take them and why?
Anyone from Northern Ireland?
Mm-hmm.
Probably like C.S. Lewis.
Oh, good choice.
Yeah, it blew me away because I like grew up, you know, watching like Alice in Wonderland, and he is the author of that, right?
C.S. Lewis... He's like Narnia and all that stuff. I can't remember who else won or not. Was it someone, Carol? Lewis Carroll?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Sorry. But yeah, just someone like that, or like, was it Oscar Wilde was from here too?
Big Oscar.
Yeah, just like some of the like Northern Irish philosophers. I would say like, maybe Oscar Wilde and just some of the, like the profound things he talked about. From what I remember, like maybe he spent a lot of time in nature too.
Yeah.
So it'd be awesome to like grab a cup of nature with them and like just kind of pick his brain. And just, I'm always in love with writers. I like to write. Just the ability for them to like have that skill and that craft to do that every day, and they just enjoy it, you know? So it's something that like I've had written a book in the past, right? Called Holy Stretch. And you know, I know the process, but I intentionally made it so that it had like spelling errors and formatting errors, because it was one of those things I wanted to put out to people and say, like, don't wait till like things are perfect, right? Mm-hmm. And I published it like unperfect. And I was like, maybe it's like the first book in history I've ever been like published unperfect, right? Or not like fully edited. So yeah, Oscar Wilde be the man.
Awesome, dude. Very cool.
Then C.S. Lewis, I love people that have that imagination to be able to like pull out these stories. J.R.R. Tolkien, same thing, right? Like, how do they like come up with these stories, right? Like, were they on something? Were they, you know, what was like their drug of choice? Was it whiskey? Was it like, what were they taking? Was it just pure imagination?
Maybe they're like that Mormon guy. They were just pretending to be high.
Yeah, right? So true.
Dude, I can't believe I got you in the studio and I didn't even talk about like how you got to Northern Ireland. I didn't even talk about like your craft with the machine and all that sort of stuff. But this is the way it happened.
Oh, yeah. It's all good, man.
All good, bro.
Yeah.
Final question then. If you could go back in time to little Tony, and you had a couple of minutes of his time, what sort of things would you say to him?
I wouldn't say anything, man. I'd just look him in the eye and hold him.
Mm. You know, it's interesting. You're the second person to give that answer. And I was thinking about this other guest earlier on in our conversation. He's a musician called Foy Vance. And I was thinking about him because we were talking before recording about like looking back at old podcast episodes and, you know, you're like, oh, I can't believe I used to be like that. And, you know, you're kind of like, wow, isn't it amazing like how things in my life have changed or whatever. And I interviewed Foy like pretty early on in the journey. And I think I was still, particularly when it came to flow, I was really chasing the flow. And like, particularly with writing, I was like, oh, how do I guarantee this every single time so that it's easy?
Limitless pill,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I'm like, where's the limitless pill? How do I become Bradley Cooper? And I republished the Foy interview around Christmas time. And there was a point in it where I asked him something just like, oh, how do you like be in that flow state? Like, and what do you do? Like, what do you do if like you get writer's block or like it's just not flowing? And he just pauses and he's like, nah, man, it's always flowing. And he talked about like walking into the studio and just like not getting himself hyped up, not getting himself, you know, not trying to chase some sort of like enlightened, super high state. But he said, just literally showing up like a miner, clocking in, clocking out, and doing his work. And honestly, I sat there in this chair and I felt like a little boy. Mm. And I was like, I'm in the presence of a professional.
Yes.
I'm in the presence of an adult. And he has just taught me some real grown-up stuff right there. You know, it was awesome.
Like fully committed.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's the same with your marriage.
That's right.
You don't wait for things to feel good. You don't chase the state. It's like you clock in and you clock in.
You just clock in.
You just keep clocking in.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you know, you have those mature adult conversations where you say, don't do that. You know, if someone's overstepping your boundary, you have to have those conversations. But you know, you don't try to ride the roller coaster. It's like you live in the middle.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Okay, bonus question. What is the kindest thing that someone has ever done for you?
It's been multiple times. It's not just one person. But multiple times, someone, or like angels, just recognized something and sponsored me.
Mm.
Just because we didn't have much money. And my mom did what she could to give me the things that I wanted to do, whether play ice hockey or, you know, travel, have money to start a business. And every single time, man, like, it's like a gift flew out of the air, and people just pulled me aside and said, like, we love what you're doing. Because I think they saw, like, the passion and the worth ethic.
Mm-hmm.
They saw the vision, and they just sponsored me, no strings attached. Just wouldn't be here if it weren't for those folks, man. Just so grateful for the life that I was able to experience so far because of that. So, yes.
Awesome, bro.
Yeah.
Again, I just feel that overwhelming challenge of, all right, your turn, fellas. You know, who are you going to sponsor?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how are you going to constructively and thoughtfully pass that flame on to the people coming up behind, you know? Tony, dude, absolute pleasure. What a surprise. What a treat. Appreciate Matthew, you, dude.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening, guys. Appreciate you.